I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker. So we're going to talk to Curtis Houck. He's the managing editor, of Newsbusters, part of the Media Research Center. We're getting a hold of him now. A couple of things going on at CBS right now that I wanted to talk to him about. And let me just read these two different headlines. CBS News reportedly instructed its staffers not to refer to Jerusalem as being part of Israel as the network faces mounting internal pressure over its handling of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Do not refer to Jerusalem as part of Israel. You know what that kind of reminds me of? It's kind of like, oh, we don't want to upset China, so let's not talk about Hong Kong or Singapore, you know, because, yeah, obviously we want to be in good graces with China, so why would we ever want to upset them? Who are you trying to appease to when you say, hey, don't refer to Jerusalem as part of Israel? Are you trying to, like, suck up to, I don't know, Palestine or Iran? What are you doing with this? Joining us now is managing editor of Newsbusters, part of the Media Research Center, Curtis Houck. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, always a pleasure. Good to be back with you.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things going on at CBS. Not only did they have that internal memo or whatever, don't refer to Jerusalem as part of Israel, but the other thing that they're running into is that they had this exclusive interview with Vice President Kamala Harris, and the way they edited the interview is raising some questions. So let me just ask this, generally speaking, what's so wrong with editing a presidential candidate's interview to make them look better if you're a news agency?
Well, especially considering the forum in which you shared the long interview, 60 minutes, and you probably had all the time in the world because Donald Trump rightly did not go on there. Yeah, you've got a problem. And the fact that you can't share a fully unedited from sit down to walk out transcript because you're like, I don't know, you just don't feel like doing it, reeks of a lack of journalistic ethics, because it's not like it's impossible to do, that you can't get some 21-year-old production assistant to sit there and go through and clean up closed captioning, okay? We understand that the CBS Evening News, that's only 30 minutes and a political segment, but it'd be like, 2 minutes and 20 seconds, just picking a number, that you're going to run smaller sound bites in an interview. We understand that, but when you're doing an hour-long special, I feel like you have time to kind of unspool things.
Yeah, I think so, too. And accurately. For full disclosure, I think it would be important to understand if you're asking questions, you want to hear their unedited answer. And I think it also goes to show you that there is this sort of preferential treatment where they have been, at least for the past 4+ years, have been very beneficial to the Biden administration.
Right.
I mean, I think they have this pattern of, hey, we need to run defense and help protect this senile old man. So, you know, I guess this is an extension of that. We're going to keep that defense running.
Yeah, why not? We're already kind of in this pack herd mentality mindset. You know, we already kind of bungled our way through the debate, fact checking J.D. Vance when we weren't supposed to. So let's just keep it going here with 60 Minutes. And why not? Let's just keep it going with disciplining our otherwise liberal kind of socialist co-host who merely decided to go off the reservation by saying, oh, I don't know, does Israel deserve to exist? You who think Israel is an apartheid state, like, what is going on over there? I mean, we understand, right? We know that these guys, of course, this is what we do. You know, we talk about this all the time, and we know this. But, like, really, like, to have three crazy things, stupid things happen to your network in just a short period of time, it's like, what is in the water? It's remarkable stuff.
I have to ask, and mostly out of pure curiosity, they've had this strategy, at least that we've seen, because you research a lot of how much airtime different networks give to certain topics. All of a sudden, you're seeing this resurgent. Kamala Harris is out there over and over and over again. She's starting to get out there. Do you have any indication if they're at least trying to treat the candidates fairly here, or is it almost all negative coverage of Donald Trump and all positive for Kamala Harris?
It's square peg in the round hole. You know, they're trying to dress this up and make it seem like it's generic and organic news when really it's just dressed up public relations. Really, that's what this is. Barack Obama comes out. Oh, my gosh. Isn't that so cool? Oh, we just happened to obtain video of him backstage beforehand talking to African-American men and chastising them. Isn't that so great? He's like a football coach, is what a coach giving a pregame talk. You know, that was one of the lines from one of the CBS co-hosts on CBS Mornings Plus, their new third hour. And it's like, hold on a second. Like, you know, we're not going to, like, dive into this. Oh, Donald Trump lied about this today, meanwhile. You know, that was what CNN was doing. He plays up migrant fears. They love creating narratives. Who's up, who's down? Kamala Harris on the road doing this and talking about this. Well, Donald Trump lied about this. Back to you. It's so formulaic at this point.
I think that most people, I don't want to say most people, but I think that most of them know who they're voting for already. Do you think any of this is working tactic-wise? And do you think it's intentional, perhaps, the way that they decide to cover these things in order to try to sway the ones that haven't decided?
I mean, you would think, I think that's probably what they're trying to do, because somehow some small percentage of the population really doesn't know what they're going to do yet. And they know this election is going to be as close as it is. And that's why it's important that we see at Newsbusters to talk about these networks, because we know the election is going to be close. Most people agree that about that. And these broadcast network evening newscasts in particular, where we found 85% negative coverage for Trump and Vance going into the VP debate, and 100% negative coverage or 100% positive coverage of Kamala Harris going into the presidential debate. Those shows are important because they're watched by more people than even the most watched shows on cable. Very often on some nights they outdraw the leading news show on cable, which is usually the Five or Waters or one of those Fox primetime shows. And so, yes, fewer people watch them than they used to, but it's still, on big news nights, it could probably get close to 10 million people. So it's like an election that's going to be fought by a few people there. I think we wanted to show the American people that these are what the most watched newscasts in America are saying. And these segments then are chopped up and put on YouTube and social media pages as well.
Yeah, I would say this. Let me read you a headline from the New York Post, and they're criticizing. It says Kamala Harris's airbrushed photo on Vogue cover panned by critics, quote, holy Photoshop, Batman. So they show a picture of it. It is very, very much doctored. I would argue the same thing happens on a lot of these evening news. It's basically the same concept. We're going to Photoshop the coverage to make it look unblemished. And if you think that is fake, then I think what you're consuming needs to be also examined. And there's one other headline from the New York Post. CBS News allegedly tells... Oh, no, wrong one. I'm sorry. Ex-CBS staffers call for outside probe of 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris amid editing scandal. Are you going to hold your breath? Do you think perhaps they will investigate what happened there and change course and try to go in the right direction? Is that possible?
No, I don't think that's going to happen, even though there's precedent for them releasing full transcripts of interviews. And then on Vogue, I think this is just so tiresome. I mean, it's so stupid. I said this earlier today on Newsmax that, like, they keep thinking, Annie Leibovitz, the photographer that does a lot of these photo shoots for Democratic women and, you know, Democratic male heartthrobs like Beto O'Rourke, they keep thinking that, like, putting these magazines on the stand of Hudson News at the airports is something that people are going to flock to and buy along with their $6 bottles of water or in the checkout line at the grocery store. I mean, Hershey's, you know, candy bar, Vogue. I mean, come on. we know what people are going to do.
So what kind of things are you working on right now at the Media Research Center? What are things that are going on behind the scenes? Can you tell us?
Well, we do plan to have another study about, network coverage of Trump and Kamala before the election. So that's going to be coming out. I have a story up about how Michael Strahan, the NFL player, there's this thing with like making sports people journalists, and it's really stupid because they're basically Ron Burgundy's, you know, so they just read whatever's put in the teleprompter for them. CBS has Nate Burleson. His producers actually gave him some good questions to ask Tim Walz, and Tim Walz did not do well, and Michael Strahan actually asked not only good questions, he asked follow-up questions, because that's often the thing that we see. This is Jake Tapper's issue. Jake Tapper will be like, oh, I asked this question of this Democrat. Well, no, you let him filibuster, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Let me mention this real quick, because this happened a couple of years ago where I think it was Michael Strahan was trying to cut a promo during the commercials, and the local affiliates forgot to cut away, so it showed the behind the scenes of what was going on. And it was a disaster. He was a train wreck. He couldn't get through one 10-second promo. That he kept doing it over and over and over again. And all the staffers around him were so annoyed. I got to imagine they're annoyed by this idea of bringing in someone that was popular in sports and trying to pretend like they know how to do the news.
Right. These networks have laid people off over the years. CBS, in their case with Nate Burleson, they laid off Jeff Glor, consumer investigative correspondent, their environmental correspondent, and yet they're going to keep Nate Burleson around, who at best was a disappointing fantasy football wide receiver that we would say, oh my gosh, he really is going to get the 8 or 9 points we need, and then he gets like 4. And Strahan, you know, most people remember him as the Michael Strahan, the guy with his teeth.
Other thing I'll ask about when it comes to coverage, you have Kamala Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, who has those accusations of him slapping his girlfriend around and who knows what else out there. They're kind of ignoring it, aren't they? Does it seem like they are just letting this one slide?
Yeah, here's the thing that's really interesting about that. I don't know if these allegations are true, because it's a lot of anonymous sources that have been talking to Josh Boswell at the Daily Mail. The woman in question has not spoken to him, at least as a on-the-record anonymous source. So there's some questions about this, and kind of the same thing goes for some of his workplaces that he's reported on as being toxic. In terms of what Emhoff was doing and fostering in terms of company culture. But there's no open forum among these networks and the news media and the body politic to vet these claims, okay? Because there's no coverage of this, it's just this thing at the Daily Mail that you see people sharing on Twitter and Facebook, you know, that Joe Scarborough makes vague allusions to today, okay? And talking about distraction, that's what Emhoff called it. He called it a distraction, which he's a lawyer. That's not a denial. Normally, you'd be like, oh, we want to do follow-ups on that, because when allegations are made against people like Justice Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh back in the day, they were very firm. They were like, this is not happening. This is not me. These are, you know, farcical allegations, high-tech lynching, et cetera, et cetera. Doug Emhoff isn't doing that. Because there's no forum in the news media, there's no desire to vet these claims to decide whether they're legitimate or not.
I know. And they're trying to make him look like, oh, what a gentleman. But wasn't his previous marriage broken up because he knocked up the nanny?
Their school teacher and impregnated the nanny, too. I mean, she lost her baby, but it was like,
oh, terrible. But
I understand that there's reconciliation, that he and his ex-wife apparently get along well now. But your marriage nonetheless ended because of this.
I know.
He's not upstanding male, you know, object and symbol.
I know. Not that we have any, honestly, I mean, we got to be fair. When it comes to lifestyles and all the other problems that politicians bring, all this does is remind me is you just can't use a politician or their family members or the first husband or whatever as your compass for morality. Just another reminder.
Right. And that's what's interesting. The Democrats make this claim talking about Donald Trump has not exactly been an upstanding person in terms of his personal life. And we say yes. But then the Democrats turn around and have those true civility bumper stickers on their cars, you know, and hate has no home here. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Clinton's so campaigning next week. Like, what are we doing?
I know.
What are you guys doing?
If people wanted to find you online, the work you're doing right now, where can they go?
Newsbusters.org, at Newsbusters on X, at the MRC on X, and I am at Curtis Houck, H-O-U-C-K.
Curtis Houck, Managing Editor at Newsbusters, part of the Media Research Center, a fantastic organization. Thanks for joining us here. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right, joining us after the break is the CEO of Power the Future, Daniel Turner, joins us. We have the cut of the day coming up a little bit later, too. Oh, your weekend is so close. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's easy to find me on there, Facebook, Twitter, at Ryan Recker. Joining us now, the CEO of Power the Future, Daniel Turner. Thank you for coming on to St. Louis Radio.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're starting to see the realization that these campaign promises, hey, oh man, we're going to have every car is going to be electric. We're all going to look like California. Everything's going to be great. There seems to be a little backpedaling. And I think part of the precursor is that the auto industry realized that these cars are sitting on the lots for 3 months and the demand is just not there right now. So we're starting to see, oh boy, this is a bad campaign stance for us. And it seems like the Kamala Harris administration, at least wannabe, were backing away from that. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, the EV mandates have disappeared, and now Kamala is saying she no longer supports them. It's curious because her administration is still pushing them. According to an executive order by President Biden, half of all cars have to be electric vehicles. Half of all cars that are sold have to be electric vehicles by the year 2030. Well, the administration hasn't rescinded that, and Kamala now says she doesn't agree with it. It'd be curious to see if she actually keeps it in place. I'm not sure how you enforce that. So imagine we're in the year 2031, and now you're a car dealer. You've sold five combustion engine cars. Can you not sell a sixth until you sell five EVs? Like, how do you actually enforce that? So again, these are the types of green policies that people espouse when it's politically popular. But now that she is in a tough race, especially in places like Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania, where a lot of these plants are located, she's backpedaled. So it makes you wonder, what's the actual support for a lot of these green initiatives to begin with?
And it's so interesting, too, because, you know, the reality that you find is if the people are actually buying it, and you find that a lot of people are just not interested when they realize, okay, these things got problems. And, I'm sure it hurts EVs when you see the Cybertruck out there, a complete, man, has that been faltering? And, you see the things like, okay, you got the floodwaters coming down south and these electric batteries are lighting on fire. Or, you take something through a car wash, it's bricking the vehicle. Like, okay, it seems like these things got a long way to go. And when politicians are telling you, well, you're just going to have to take it. I don't think people react positively to that. And I don't know if this is the number one thing that people are going to be voting on, but it is embarrassing to think that politicians and the government are going to try to force this upon people that don't want it.
Exactly. And look, I'm not opposed to buying an EV. I believe in freedom. Buy whatever car you want, whatever fits your lifestyle and your family's needs, etc. But we're not going to get a better EV product if the government forces you to buy them, right? We're not helping the EV markets by mandating them. Look, one example is the Ford F-150 Lightning. It's a cool electric truck. Joe Biden drove it around the parking lot and touted it. But, I have a farm here in rural Virginia where I'm calling you from, so I know a good thing about vehicles and what farm needs are. The Ford F-150 Lightning, I believe it was Car and Driver magazine, they hooked one up to an empty two-horse trailer, and after 80 miles, it was dead. Well, you know, I have a sheep farm. I haul thousands of pounds of sheep regularly. I need to go more than 80 miles. So what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to wait 5 hours to charge this baby up again? So it doesn't make sense. As, I mean, it looks great if you want to throw your gym bag in the back if your wife's Miata is in the shop or something. But for farmers, a Ford F-150 Lightning is not a practical vehicle, and it's outrageously expensive. So why are they forcing you to buy one? I'm not saying the Ford F-150 Lightning one day could not possibly be a great vehicle. But right now it is not, compared to what a combustion engine F-150 does, and government forcing it on the consumer is not going to make it a better product.
Let's talk about some of these other methods of energy that we should be looking at right now. And, you know, during the Trump administration, you heard a lot about energy independence, how important it would be for the United States not to have to rely on the whim of an OPEC or some of these other countries providing this crude oil or any type of energy to us, because, hey, they're the ones that get to dictate the terms. We don't want to be under their thumb. And how important that is, you know, his message to other countries, you don't want this either. And they laughed at him and scoffed at him and how that came back to bite him. So here we are. Energy, the cost of it impacts so many different aspects of our lives. To the way that we basically we look at housing and energy are like the two things that drive these big inflation problems that we're having. So now we're looking at it and, okay, you have Donald Trump out there and saying you got to stop making this fracking the boogeyman. Like, it's this method that they've come up with have done some pretty miraculous things in order to help us when it comes to energy. So what's the latest on that?
Well, the fracking ban is another example where Vice President Harris has changed her position. She's on record saying she would support a fracking ban. She wants to get rid of fracking. Now she has walked away from it. And that's good. She should walk away from it. Half of our oil wells and more than two-thirds of our natural gas wells use fracking to extract more of this product. So if Kamala Harris no longer supports it, well, then what data set did she look at, right? And this is where she's avoiding the press and she's avoiding hard conversations. She supported a ban. Why? You no longer support a ban. Why? You have to ask her, what did you look at? What criteria? What data? What was brought to your attention to have you change your position? But she doesn't want to answer those questions, so she just says, I no longer support it, and we're supposed to accept her at her word. Quite frankly, as someone who works in the energy space, I don't accept that word. I think she wants to win, and I don't blame her. If I were running for office, I would want to win too. But these are not, you know, hey, Ryan, I used to like broccoli and now I hate broccoli. I used to like this movie, now I like this movie, right? These are really fundamental questions, and the American people deserve honest answers why she's changed position.
No, I hear you on that. And are they trying to bring back this Green New Deal? Is that a thing again?
She sponsored it in the Senate when she was a senator. It received zero votes. Everybody voted present. Now she says she no longer supports it. But again, she's on record saying that she would suspend the filibuster to pass a Green New Deal. So again, what changed your position on the Green New Deal? You supported it as a senator. Now you don't support it as a presidential candidate. Stop treating the American people like children. Answer us honestly why you've changed position, or just assume that we all believe that you're saying what is convenient because you want to win.
Well, I think that's really the answer, right? Oh, boy. Polling shows that I need to say this, and then with a laugh at the end. Then she turns to her staff real quick. Should I laugh at that or not? They get the answer, and then she changes her approach to the question. Then she says, CBS, could you edit that part out, please? I would like to answer that again. Let's talk, too, about some of the different campaign promises. And you have Donald Trump saying that he's going to cut electricity prices. How do you do that? Like, logistically speaking, how is that even possible?
It's a bold promise. He has promised to cut electricity prices in half. As a reference point, nationally, we were paying around 11 cents per kilowatt hour for electricity in 2020. Excuse me. Now we're paying 17.5 cents. So electricity has gone up considerably. And everybody who's listening to this wonderful show right now who pays an electric bill knows how much electricity has gotten expensive. For President Trump to say, I want to cut it in half, means we have to produce a lot more. That's opening natural gas plants. It's opening coal plants. It's opening nuclear plants. It is definitely doable. There's no doubt it is doable. But there's going to be a lot of political muscle necessary to build the infrastructure to produce more electricity at a lower cost. I'd love to see it, because as you just said, and you're absolutely right, electricity bill, these are the things that families are struggling with. to pay every month. And cutting it in half sounds great, but woof, you're going to need a lot of muscle to get this through. I hope he does. I'm praying for it.
Yeah, I get this opportunity to do fill in here, and you know, I lived in St. Louis for a long time, but I live in Michigan now, and one of the big projects in the west side of the state is this Palisades nuclear plant is going back online. So they removed the core, and now they're going through the process of reversing that so you can get nuclear energy back going. And it seems like that's going to be a new trend. For a while there, you talk about boogeyman power. That was like a great source of energy that they just went full blast. I don't want to say lying about it, but man, gave it a real bad shake. And Absolutely. Now they're coming around to it, and they really should have never have taken these plants offline to begin with. So you think we're going to see more reversals on that?
You're absolutely right. The anti-nuclear crowd did a wonderful job scaring the crap out of Americans that nuclear power is dangerous or is a threat. I will just say this to the American people. France generates almost 90% of its electricity from nuclear power, so much so that they sell the surplus to their neighbors, Switzerland, Germany, Spain, etc. So, I mean, not to play on stereotypes, it's kind of vulgar, but let's just do it. If the French aren't afraid of nuclear power, why are the Americans afraid of nuclear power? So absolutely. Not to mention, we have right now tens of thousands of young Americans on nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, submarines, and no one seems to claim that they're at any risk. So absolutely, we should embrace nuclear as much as we embrace coal, as much as we embrace natural gas. That's what's made our country prosperous. And the environmental left and the anti-nuclear and anti-fossil fuel crowd has scared Americans ridiculously. There's nothing to be afraid of. These are great technologies that make us prosperous and safe.
I guess, where are we when it comes to like solar panels and things? Are they more efficient than they were 10 years ago? Do you think it's going to be more of an option consumer-wise? Because, you know, they give this push and they want you to be able to put these things on your home, and they give government credits and money. Where are we when it comes to that technology?
Well, we've spent several hundred billion dollars in pushing it. This administration is clearly pushing wind and they're pushing solar. They're inferior technologies because there is a thing called night. Actually, we're getting very close to it right now, and your solar panels don't work. But when your solar panels don't work because of night or the wind is not blowing and your wind turbines don't work, your electricity consumption hasn't decreased. You still want to make coffee. You still want a hot shower. You still want lights. And so what we need is electricity that works all of the time, and that is produced right now through fossil fuels and through nuclear. I called my organization Power the Future because I do not know what tomorrow is going to bring. Maybe one day we'll perfect these technologies, but we haven't perfected it now, and punishing ourselves now does not give us a better tomorrow. So let's just embrace our fossil fuel lifestyle. Let the technological geniuses figure out a better tomorrow, but right now let's live as prosperously as we can.
And by the way, if people wanted to look up Power the Future online, anything like that, where can they go?
PowerTheFuture.com. Or, you know what, you got a question? Daniel@PowerTheFuture.com. Shoot me an email. I'd love to talk to you, and I'm thrilled to be on your show. So thank you.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I got more questions if you got time. But are there any other developing forms of energy out there that are promising, or are we just going to be stuck with inefficient stuff like solar and wind?
Well, I mean, you always hear about blue hydrogen. You hear about thorium. There's lots of things that are burgeoning. And again, who knows where they will lead? But right now, we know what works. We know that coal works. We know that natural gas works. More than half of our electric grid is powered by fossil fuels. And so unless you're willing to give that up and alter your lifestyle, which a lot of Americans, quite frankly, are not. Right. We had a heat wave a couple of weeks. It seems hard to believe that a couple of weeks ago it was hot, but it was. Right now it's cold and we want the heat to work. Americans aren't really that willing to sacrifice the comfort of their life, nor should they be. That's what's great about America, the most prosperous nation on earth. So I don't know what these new technologies will be, but punishing ourselves now is not going to hasten into their arrival. And you know, fossil fuels, by the way, this is why I fight for this industry. It does so much more than produce electricity. We're talking about electricity, right? Wind and solar produce electricity poorly, but that's all they do. But fossil fuels produce plastic and rubber and Tylenol and Tide Pods and millions of products around your home. And We can't make steel without coal. We can't make cement without coal. And how many of us are putting new shingles on the roof and we're putting new windows in? Those are all made from fossil fuels. And we've seen how expensive those products have become because we've punished fossil fuels. So we don't have a better present because of the Biden-Harris administration. And if Kamala Harris wins, I don't think we're going to have a better tomorrow either.
Yeah, and I keep thinking about the way the policies are pushing things, you know, trying to force the hand in a certain direction that may not be the smartest. And, I mean, you remember when we went through a time and they said, okay, this is the way we're going to help with our energy consumption. We need to make your home a little bit more energy efficient. So we're going to try to help you upgrade the insulation in your roof, or we're going to put better windows in, things like that. They seem to have completely abandoned efficiency anymore. They just have gone full blown. We have to adapt to this by putting billions of dollars into technology we don't know it'll ever pay off.
Well, it's a great point. And this is where government doesn't always know the answers, or quite frankly, makes life more difficult, because this administration in particular, they have given huge tax credits for weatherization, weather-efficient windows, weather-efficient shingles. And you say, okay, fine, they want you to be more efficient, here are your tax credits. But purchasing all those products requires a lot of fossil fuels, and they've punished fossil fuel industry and made those products more expensive. So how do you have a government policy on the one hand that says, buy energy-efficient shingles? Oh, and by the way, we're going to make energy-efficient shingles really expensive by making oil, gas, and coal really expensive. So this is where government just doesn't know what it's doing. And when you have a lot of ideology and you have a lot of power, sometimes you get chaos. And that's where we are with our inflation. That's where we are with our consumer pricing. We're in chaos because people who don't know how the world works, don't know how farming works, don't know how manufacturing works, they've had a lot of power to affect change, but they don't have a lot of understand of what they've actually done. So that has been the crux of this campaign right now and this entire presidential cycle. We feel chaos, and we haven't even talked about world policy, because you look at what's happening in the world based upon energy prices. We've got chaos in the world, too. So I think people just want to return to a little bit of normalcy, and stability of markets is a great place to start.
Yep. All right. Powerthefuture.com. That's the website.
That's the website. And like I said, it's great to be on. Or shoot me an email, Daniel@powerthefuture.com. Tell me your questions, your concerns. Tell me what you think I'm wrong. I'd love to talk to folks because this is what I do for a living.
Awesome. Daniel Turner, CEO, Power of the Future. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate
it. Great time. Thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
You as well. We have one more segment left until it's the weekend. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Oh, I hope we learned something today. Maybe we did, maybe we didn't. I just hope we did. All right, I had fun. You know, I hope we get an opportunity to do this again sometime in the future. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in. And let's get to that cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, so I'm going to play you a clip of Vice President Kamala Harris out there campaigning. And before I play this for you, I just want you to think, remember the times when Kamala Harris was on the stage and everyone just thought she was drunk? I think drunk Kamala's coming back. Now that she's out there more, I don't know if it's an act, as in like, hey, I need to pretend I'm happy, so this is how happy people act. I can't tell if it's just naturally her. I can't tell if she's actually drunk, but I think the drunk Kamala's coming back. Let's play clip number 21, if we could.
So when we think about what's at stake in this election, whoa, it's packed with some stuff. It's packed with some fundamental stuff. I say rather articulately.
Maybe she's not drunk, but she, because she said articulately or whatever, but she said it without slurring, so maybe it's just an act. Remember when she was on the debate stage and this is when she wanted to be president and she was just eviscerated by Tulsi Gabbard? Oh, did she just get torn apart? And that kind of ruined her chances. I think she's trying to return back to the, I'm going to be the happy, crazy aunt, Kamala Harris. in some instances, or she just has a much higher opinion about her ability to make people laugh and smile. All right, that was your cut of the day. All right, I got a couple of more cuts I want to get to you. There was a voter montage. This is pretty good. When you sit down and you talk to people, what do you want to get out of this election? What would be important when it comes to your own life? Because ultimately speaking, you want to be better off in the future than you are right now. Unfortunately for you, you're not better off the way you were 5 years ago. You're definitely not. And you go back and you look and you said, okay, what's the big difference 5 years ago to today? What could have changed? And is there a way to reverse that? And luckily there is. We'll see if the American people agree. Let's go see what the voters think. Let's play clip number 18.
The economy is tough. I don't see it getting any better.
I think inflation is an issue, especially with the cost of groceries and everything like that.
The housing prices especially. I've been looking for a house since COVID, and it was extremely difficult.
Challenges that we're having with the cost of everything, the cost of living.
Housing is an issue.
I just think energy is probably a big one, too. I think people are tired of paying $4 a gallon of gas.
Oh, really? You think people are tired of that? I saw this one story on MarketWatch. Let me read this to you because I thought, what a big lie. No one's following this. It says groceries are more affordable now than in 2019. So why are prices such a hot button issue? So I read the story. You want to guess how they try to manipulate this? They say, well, based on inflation in the data we have compared to how much money you were making back then with wages, technically speaking, even though you're spending more money right now on groceries, it shouldn't hurt you as much as it did back then. And I keep thinking, wow, is there anyone that has gone to the grocery store in the past year under Joe Biden and what would continue that trend with Kamala Harris? Has anyone went and said, wow, man, this is a great deal. I can't believe it. I filled up my grocery cart and wow, I got to say, the savings are just fantastic. I got to thank Joe Biden for this. Is there anyone that feels that way? No, not one person. And you know, let's say hypothetically, you are making more money because not everyone is. They give this impression, oh, yeah, everyone's making so much more money. Oh, everyone's keeping up with inflation. Everyone's rich. Talk to someone on a fixed income. Ask them how that's keeping up. But even if you are doing that, you feel like you are jogging in place at the very best. Like that's the absolute best you can get. Because if you're jogging in place and you, oh, okay, I guess I can still afford groceries and my fridge looks the same way. It would be nice if I was able to spend that money on something else. But, you know, now that groceries are more expensive, well, I guess I got to spend it here still. And I still don't have money for anything else. You're not better off then. And tell me this, have you gone through your fridge or your cabinet and noticed it's not fully stocked like it used to? You remember a time when you used to go to the grocery store and spend $120 for your family? And that was enough? When did that end? Well, I can tell you. It was right around that 2017 and beyond. Things got better, and then 2020 hit, and then you had the COVID pandemic. We thought Donald Trump would be reelected because all indications earlier in the year were headed that way. He did not. Joe Biden gets in office. What happens after that? Their policies make it very difficult to transport these goods. Taxes get out of control. Inflation gets crazy because they do these extra stimulus. They continue to throw money out the window. We don't even have an account of where all of this money is going. And then next thing you know, oh, the predictable happened. Inflation hit, prices go sky high, you're paying more everywhere, and this is where you sit today. And there is a responsibility for that. However, I don't think anyone in the Biden administration or Kamala Harris has taken any responsibility. I saw this one tweet, and I'll do this here real quick because I know we're getting close to the end of the show. One person tweeted this, Ron Rule, I don't know who this person is, but said, how did we get from the 90s to here? And this is what he said. People got along. Nobody cared about race. Life was affordable. Entertainment wasn't laced with agendas. Wealth was something to aspire to, not scoff at. And divisive politics hadn't permeated everything. How did we get from here to there? I mean, really? I think that's a good question. And some people, you know, you put on the hat or you say the phrase, make America great again. And they say, oh, yeah, what? You want to go back to slavery? That's what you think America's so great. You want to go back to where you can own people and women couldn't vote and blah, blah, blah. That's what they say. No, I think generally speaking, people want to go back to a time when, oh, I don't know, you got along and nobody cared about race and life was affordable and entertainment wasn't laced with agendas and wealth was something to aspire to, not scoff at, and divisive politics hadn't permeated everything. Maybe that's what we mean by that. Maybe that's what we should mean. All right, follow me online if you want to reach out to me. I love getting messages. If you listened to the show and enjoyed it today, at Ryan Recker on Twitter, Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. And I hope to get a chance to do this again with you again soon. I'm Ryan Recker. Mark Reardon back on Monday, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.